Confluent bubble making a giant hit into a double, words that are weighty with nothing but trouble, Tinker to Evers to Chance. Those eight lines of doggerel were first printed in the New York Evening Mail in 1910. The author was columnist Franklin P. Adams. He was referring to three baseball players whose very names in concert have become synonymous with precision teamwork. They played with the Chicago Cubs, as suggested in the Adams poem. Joe Tinker at shortstop, Johnny Evers at second base, and Frank Chance at first. Together they comprised a well-oiled infield, a surefire double play combination. One man on, ground ball to short, and like lightning, it was Tinker to Evers to Chance. Individually, they were nothing special. Alone, Tinker was distinguished by only a couple of minor statistics. Evers and Chance by themselves held no records in any category. But it was as a team within a team that they made such staggering trouble for their opponents. But this is the rest of the story. The year before Joe Tinker's death, he spoke to a college audience in Winter Park, Florida. And here's part of what he said. He said, Chance Evers and I played together for 11 years as a double play combination. Now, that's a record. During those 11 years, we set a mark for double plays that's never been equaled. But I don't know the exact number. Well, now the reason Joe did not know the double play total for Tinker to Evers to Chance was that the National League did not even begin keeping that sort of individual statistics until 1919. By then, Tinkers, Evers, and Chance were no longer a trio. So, the three never did set any double play records. In fact, when the Chicago Cubs were doing their best between 1906 and 1910, the team as a whole never ranked higher than third in the double play category. John McGraw, manager of the New York Giants for 31 years, once cited a number of double play combinations which he believed superior to Tinker, Evers, and Chance. Ferris Parent and LaChance in the 1890s. Baltimore Orioles. McGraw was with the club back then. He also named Wagner, Miller, and Abstein of the Pirates, Barry Collins and McInnes of the Athletics. McGraw's point was this. Nobody ever wrote a poem for those fellows. Now, don't misunderstand. Nobody is denying Tinker, Evers, and Chance were an incredible double play combination. It's just that they were not the best. Most everyone, including the three men themselves, automatically assumed that they were because of eight lines of verse scribbled by Franklin Adams. But you want to know something else? Generations of us have irresistibly associated those three names with close formation partnership. Tinker to Evers to Chance. Despite the fact that Tinker and Evers strongly disliked each other, they even fist fought on the field. And I mean for 1 3-year period, during the very height of their careers, those three spoke to one another. Not once. And now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guests are three of my brothers from the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society, Jay Leach, Kaylin Clark, and Will Barnaby. We're going to be talking about taking a multi-generational look at the culture, politics, and the state of our country and world, how cryptocurrency and artificial intelligence will shape the future, and reflections on the United States as we head into the semi-cinquentennial. Actually, we're in the semi-cinquentennial week these days. Guys, welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
It's pretty tight in here, folks. And you're going to have, when you talk, Kaylin, you're going to have to jump on that microphone. So I'm going to have you guys do a quick reintroduction. I mean, Will, you've been on the show a couple of times, but not as a member of the MGGS. I have not. Yeah, so this is going to be your maiden voyage. So just reintroduce yourself real quickly.
Good afternoon. I'm Will Barnaby with Central Coast Lending.
That's all you're going to say?
That's it.
Okay, and what generational cohort do you live in?
I am Gen X.
You are Gen X.
The best. The best.
You're an early wave Gen X, right?
I think he just called me old. I'm pretty sure that was a dig right away.
Well, you know what I am, so I'm a lot older than you. I was thinking I'm still not old enough to be your father, though.
No. You could be a much younger uncle in the family.
Yeah, something like that. All right, and Jay?
Yeah, Jay with Central Coast Moving and Storage, and I am a late wave millennial.
And
yeah, I'm Kaylin Clark. I am with Hammers IT, and I am also a late wave millennial.
All right, and I forgot to tell everybody. Thanks for introducing yourself, guys. By the way, folks, you can call in or text with questions 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL, and the question of the day, which we got one caller, and we're going to be talking about this with the guys here towards the end of the show, is what is the most important aspect of the Declaration of Independence to you? Why do you think this is the seminal document of our country? So, all right. We're going to start with something that, I have to say, Kaylin and Jay have kind of opened my eyes to a little bit, and it's an evolving topic, really. I mean, I think if I hadn't done the research after we talked the last time, I wouldn't even want to talk about this because let's talk about the evolution of cryptocurrency, really, and where it seems to be going, especially really under the Trump administration. What are you breaking up the studio here, Jay? So what we're talking about here, folks, is cryptocurrency as, I guess, it's basically stable coin, right, that we're talking about. It's as opposed to, define the difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum versus what's referred to as stable coin.
So, yeah, I mean, cryptocurrency in general is just a way to classify a new technology. So, like, why crypto matters is, like, the internet gave us the ability to move information instantly, and cryptocurrencies attempt to do the same, but with value. So not just information, but value. So stable coins aren't trying to replace the dollar. They're trying to move the dollar faster and cheaper. So that's the big difference between stable coins and like a Bitcoin or an Ethereum, is each cryptocurrency has its own utility and what it's intended to be used for. So stable coins is generally a digital token designed to maintain a stable value, and often it's pegged to the U.S. dollar.
Right, or treasuries or something
correct.
Like that.
Yeah, correct.
Okay, because I even found out in doing my research that even the Ameriprise now allows me to have a crypto account with them.
Right.
And with using stablecoin.
Exactly.
Again, why would I want to use a stablecoin as opposed to a credit card or dollars or something like that?
Yeah, so I guess some of the potential benefits would be like faster payments. So the blockchain technology allows for instantized verification of a transfer, lower transaction costs. So that kind of addresses like why you would want to use that over something like a credit card, is there's just lower transaction cost, and then 24/7 settlement. Hmm. So like right now with the dollar, if you were to send money over the weekend, you have to wait till business hours. You're confined to the hours of business. So stable coins allow for a 24/7 settlement. Even easier international transfers as well.
So it's almost like creating like an international currency.
Kinda.
Because basically if you have your stable coin wallet on your phone.
Right.
And I'm in Timbuktu.
Right.
And there's another person that can take that cryptocurrency, then I can just transact. I don't have to go exchange money at an exchange anymore.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. That makes some sense.
And so like some of the risk is not every stablecoin mm-hmm. is backed equally. So that's mm-hmm. kind of like your question, the difference between like a Bitcoin or a stablecoin. It's very, very important for the consumer to understand what it's backed by. Yeah. You know, what institution is verifying this stablecoin or this coin in general, the cryptocurrency.
What are your thoughts, Kalen, on this?
I would say
because you're a lot smarter than Jay.
No, I don't know about that. I would say that the U.S. dollar has already sort of turned digital in the last couple decades. Most of our currency is online anyway. It's all numbers on a screen, and cryptocurrency can be seen as a technology that builds a foundation to support that evolution of the U.S. dollar becoming digital. And like Jay was saying, it's used to send money between different institutions, and the current system's outdated, and it actually, there's a lot of companies that take a little fee along the way of that transfer, and that transfer takes more time. So cryptocurrency is seen to speed that up, especially coins like XRP. Its primary utility is data or is money transferring. So it's seen as more cost effective, it's faster. You're not getting as many fees taken out when you're doing the traditional wire transfer, and it's not held to those same timelines like Jay had mentioned.
Okay, and so does that make more sense to you now, Will, or does that what questions would you have? Because you're a money guy, so
well, sure. But the first thing I thought was, what's it going to evolve to? You say it's evolving into a more digital deal. What is money evolving? I mean, where are we going with it? Number one, number two. You know, if you're going down to a store, you're not going to use the currency, but you're not going to use a cryptocurrency, right?
It depends on if that store adopts that as a payment option, because it's not like every cryptocurrency's utility is for the purpose of transferring money between. XRP is a good example where that is its primary use case. If they're trying to get the banks off the old style of transferring money and to use and adopt XRP as that new method. But there are businesses that accept transactions with cryptocurrency just like you would with a credit card. It's really not much different.
It makes more sense to me when you're talking about a wire, because mm-hmm. that is time constrained. Like running a Visa card is still faster than paying with a cryptocurrency, or am I mistaken?
It depends on the business, because if you have a cryptocurrency and they accept that currency, it would just be a tap of your phone or a tap of a crypto wallet, and then it would take it out just the same speed.
And so the speed would be more on the back end. Like, what is that settlement time? Even like with a Visa right now, like my understanding is if a business takes a credit card payment, there's still a delay in the time that money is then available to the business that took mm-hmm. in that payment.
Okay. And I undoubtedly understand the transaction costs.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, because you're right. Every step along the way, somebody's taking a piece of it.
Sometimes multiple entities, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So again, I think that one of the things that I'm seeing, well, first of all, what I'm seeing is that I haven't gone overseas in years, but I remember going overseas, and the first thing you want to do is go get some pesos or some
or
some francs when you're in France, whatever it is,
right?
Or euros, I guess now, and you know, but I remember euros too. And you're always looking at how they're jobbing you on the transaction fees,
yeah, right, or the transfer rate, right?
So, yeah, or the transfer rate, or yeah, whatever it is.
Yep.
So I see that as an advantage. So an XRP, let's say, which is tied to treasuries, basically, correct, or the dollar. Is that, I think, believe that the types are stable coin. Let's just call it a stable coin. Is tied to some stable asset class.
So it's essentially like investing into XRP, as an example, is like basically trusting that or hoping that the banks adopt XRP as its primary mode of money transportation between different accounts and between different people. And so if the banks go off of their current methods and styles and they adopt XRP on a wide scale, it'll increase its value significantly. So that's like why most people invest into XRP, particularly mm-hmm. XRP.
Mm-hmm. So, but again, I guess it's kind of like if you want to just have money, it's if you want to, instead of having money in a savings account, you could put it into XRP. And I guess or stable coin, and I guess if that asset class that's tied to that stable coin goes up, you have more money, right? Mm-hmm. You earn something on it, right? Like interest,
yeah.
Right? Or you lose money,
yeah.
If it go, you know. So again, I mean, just like T bills go up and down every day, right? Right. Oh yeah. Will,
not just every day.
You watch
like
those
hour to hour.
Yeah, you, minute to minute. You watch those all day in the lending business.
Yeah, and it affects everything.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It definitely goes through everything. The big question is, if it's tied to treasuries and all of a sudden you have, give me just a second, this huge demand for these short-term treasuries, right? So that's theoretically going to drive the yield that they have to pay down. How is that going to affect everything else that's tied to treasuries or, say, mortgage-backed securities?
Well, what I was reading in some of these links that I got off of AI, of course, was the fact that it should make the advantage of these asset classes being tied to, let's say, 10-year T-bills,
yes,
bonds, is that it would potentially drive down the interest rates to make it better for consumers when they borrow money.
It would if they were buying a 10-year, possibly, but I think they're going a shorter term. I think they're looking at 2 years.
I don't know.
I'm asking.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I have no idea either. I think a better way to explain like what we're saying is that XRP is, another example of a cryptocurrency. And I feel like cryptocurrency is almost like a buzzword. Like, it's scary. Like, I feel like in the next 5 years, there's got to be a different term that's used to market this this technology.
Yeah.
Like, whether you want to call it, like, a digital dollar would be a way to represent, like, a stable coin. Because, like, stable coins are, is, for example, you have one USD. USDC is a stable coin, equals one US dollar. Our Tether is USDT, equals one US dollar. So these are intended to remain close to the value of the US dollar, which is very different than, like, a XRP or a Bitcoin. These are going to be more of, it's the same technology, but what the asset that it's tied to does fluctuate more.
Right.
And so that's where you have cryptocurrencies that you could invest in and treat like an investment, like a stock or a T-bill or whatever that may be. And then you have the stable coins, which are going to be different.
Okay. But Bitcoin is tied to
just the fact that it's a limited resource. And
it's just a limited number. It's so that's foundation. More of it. That's more about just investing and trying
right.
to make
correct.
Money. So yeah, there's
correct.
Definitely seems to be two different categories.
Yeah, so XRP is a technology, right?
Yeah.
So you're investing in the technology that is XRP. So it's not so much you think of XRP as like a single cryptocurrency coin like you would a Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It's but different it, that way.
That I think has a lot to do with the fear that comes from like me and Barry and people our age, right? Because one of them is just an investment tool that seems like it's tied to nothing, but the other is a little bit of a different deal.
Right.
So there's two categories.
There is, right? Yeah.
Well,
but
I think
they got the same kind of name.
I mean, I think at some level, you know, I think at some level, Bitcoin is kind of a closer analogy would be to gold.
Correct.
Because, but again, gold is a, you know, millennium long store of value, as is silver and other, you know, stuff like that, platinum and that kind of thing. So it's more accepted.
Right.
But I have noticed that Bitcoin was below 60,000 this morning. And I'm guessing that a lot of people, I was thinking maybe people are still investing in cryptos, but they're hedging with the stable coins against a Bitcoin in an attempt not to, you know, not to be totally exposed to just Bitcoin. I mean, what are you hearing anything like that? That people are hedging using the stable coins?
I would say the hedging that I see is more with, again, it's really important to separate the two. So like when you're investing, you're going to hedge with a better investment, and stable coins are not, they're just not an investment.
Yeah, it's like a bank account. It's like a savings account. Yeah.
Correct. And you know, if you're going to hedge a stock, you're not going to go
right
by, you're not going to put money in a saving account because you get, you know, close to nothing on interest.
Well, I guess what I want to move on to the next topic before the break here, but I think what I got out of this young man, Will, is that us old guys shouldn't put our heads in the sand and we need to keep watching this.
Yeah, I think we're a bit late, man. I think we should have jumped into this about 15 years ago.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you would think that, but there's such a large amount of the population that aren't investing in cryptocurrency that you're still ahead of the game even today.
Yeah.
So it's not what you think.
And I do want to say, and before we leave this topic, you know, because of the Trump administration, I mean, it's becoming a thing. You know, the IRS has opined on the tax treatment. The Federal Trade Commission has provided guidance on scams. And so you should really talk to your investment advisor and people who know more about it than we do.
Oh, for sure.
about getting into it. But I think ultimately, it's something we need to keep, because it's not going away. That's not for sure.
It's not, yeah.
It doesn't appear to be going away.
Read the terminology. That's really what's key here, is like understanding the different terms.
Okay. Let's move on real quickly. Let's talk a little bit about AI. And I think the two things that I want to get your take on, I mean, one of the biggest issues, of course, is that all of these Zoomers, Gen Zers, and even younger millennials like you are worried that AI is going to take your job and you're not going to be able to work. Now you guys are gainfully employed in very good businesses. You know, people leave what you guys are doing. But basically, we were talking the other day about how, you know, speakers are getting up at college commencements and getting booed. What do you get millennials think about it, this whole thing? What are you hearing from your cohort, your generational cohort?
Yeah, again, I try to be open-minded. So like AI to me is almost like another industrial revolution. It's just a advancement. So like it's going to help with writing, with coding, with customer service, with legal research, business automation. So like it's something to be used as like a tool. The example I always like to give is, you know, I'm sure Barry would remember this, and most boomers would, is that, you know, and you used to have to go to a library. If you wanted to write a paper, you would go to a library,
right?
You would pull books out and you would cite books and actually go to a physical location to do that. And now today that'd be absolutely ridiculous to write a paper and go down to the library, mm-hmm. and pull a book to try and cite it. So it's just an advancement in technology. So I think that AI is scary because it could reduce the amount of just like basic labor that's needed, but those that are willing to adopt it and willing to change will be able to produce more work than they could have ever done by themselves.
Well, I heard somebody talking about this on one of the podcasts the other day, and it was reported that even though Disney is using more AI to do all their cartoons and whatever their animations, they're still hiring more and more people.
Absolutely.
But they're just doing different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you, Will?
I gotta say, I think it's a bigger shift than this.
Go ahead, finish your thought.
I think it's a bigger shift. Like now we have tools creating more and more efficient tools.
Right.
Yeah.
Before, people generally had to create the tools that made them more and more efficient.
Right.
Now the tools are doing it for us. And that is
the scary part.
Exponential growth of technology.
Yeah. All right. Well, folks, when we return, we're going to continue this for a few minutes, and then we're going to move on to politics and generational attitudes towards all kinds of different things. So stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care. All your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. The Supreme Court rejecting President Trump's executive order aimed at ending birthright citizenship for all children born on U.S. soil. Republicans in Congress could take up an effort to end birthright citizenship. House Speaker Mike Johnson.
We'll see. I'm sure there's going to be lots of discussion about that. I will say I'm very disappointed in that outcome. I think it subjects the country to serious challenges going forward, and we'll have to deal with it as a Congress.
The High Court majority ruled the 14th Amendment confers citizenship on any person born on U.S. soil. Member of Congress who's been absent from Capitol Hill for nearly 4 months is back at work with an explanation. Fox's Chris Foster.
New Jersey House Republican Tom Keene Jr. says he was diagnosed and hospitalized with depression, not just feeling sad.
It is physical. It is emotional.
He says he hadn't expected to be gone so long.
America's listening to Fox News.
Hi, this is Chris from We Help You Legal. Legal documents should be simple and affordable. At We Help You Legal, there are no lawyers and no high costs, just certified experts to assist you with living trusts, wills, divorce matters, corporations, and LLCs.
Hi, I'm Christina. We also offer notary services. You can find us online at wehelpyoulegal.com or call 805-237-7770.
We Help You Legal, your Central Coast legal document company.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with my brothers from the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society, Jay Leach, Kalen Clark, and Will Barnaby. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. The other topic, and I want to bring this up because I am having an interesting guest next week, a gentleman by the name, I think his name is James Walker. He's the CEO of a company on the East Coast that's building nano-nuclear power plants. And interesting, and they contacted me. They wanted to come on to a station that was in the Diablo Canyon area. Right. So I haven't had a chance to talk to him yet, but it'll be an interesting conversation. But then there was also an article in the Wall Street Journal today about, you know, are we throwing too much money at these new nuclear technologies when we already know how to build nuclear reactors? So that's an interesting topic. But the bigger issue, I think, especially for rural communities, and I was just talking to a friend of mine who lives outside of Phoenix, they had to put a moratorium on building power plants because they don't have building data centers because they don't have enough electricity.
Yeah.
So again, this is another big problem in the areas. What do you have any thoughts on that, Will? I mean, you know,
I think we should have been building nuclear power plants for quite some time.
Yeah.
Like, obviously there were things that went bad, and the problem is there's a group of people that think nuclear and they think bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Well, they think China syndrome and all the propaganda that we got fed in the 80s and 90s for Three Mile Island, for sure. Sure.
There definitely were mistakes, but they're undoubtedly can create a lot of energy and can be relatively clean now.
Yeah. Just about infinite energy.
Yeah.
And carbon free.
I don't know enough about these nuclear plants to really have an opinion that's strong, but for a long time, kind of felt like we should have been investing in nuclear power plants.
Perfecting it.
You're going to suck at something when you start.
Right.
You got to do it a few times and take a few lumps before you get good.
Well, exactly.
You know, what are you guys, is there something on the millennial horizon that's beyond nuclear power and all that kind of stuff?
Just what Elon says, we're going to space and he's going to power AI data centers from space.
Well, isn't the hydrogen powered cars and stuff like this that,
you know,
those really didn't take off. Those kind of flopped.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting topic. We didn't throw that in, but I'm going to throw that in real quickly. What do you guys think of Elon Musk? Because he's become so politicized now.
Yeah. I mean, I think he, you know, what did he start with? PayPal was his big deal and sold it and made a bunch of money. And I mean, he's undoubtedly incredibly intelligent, a certified genius. Mm-hmm. I think what he's trying to do in terms of space is very cool. I don't know if he should have jumped into the political arena so heavily like he did, because now it's very much tarnished his reputation, which before was almost like a golden boy. Everybody was like, loved Elon. And then he started doing the political stuff and it just kind of wrecked his reputation a bit. But I think he's got potential. He's doing cool stuff. You know, I think space travel is important. Understanding what's outside of our planet's important. Technology is important. Mm-hmm. So I don't know him on a personal level, obviously.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
He talks about you all the time.
Oh yeah, sure.
What do you think, Will?
I respect the curiosity. I think that's his primary drive, is just his curiosity. He doesn't protect his patents. But sometimes when people are super intelligent in one area, maybe be a little lacking in another.
Yeah.
Like, there's definitely a yin and yang.
Yeah, for sure.
Some of his public appearances were cringy.
Mm-hmm.
I would say cringy is a nice way to say it.
Yeah, he's a little, he's on the spectrum.
Yeah, but I don't take political advice or, you know,
no
relationship
kidding.
Advice from like sports people either. Like, I never really understand how people like, okay, this is what he's really good at. Let him go be really good at it. And if he's, words I can't say on the radio, not a nice person in other
ways.
It kind of is what it is.
There are some personal habits that trouble me.
Yeah.
Sure.
But I will say he is a First Amendment warrior. And that's like, that to me, that makes him okay. I mean, ultimately, you know, as long as he's not breaking the law.
Right.
You know, people need to not be so sensitive, but.
Yeah. All right. Well, speaking about high levels of sensitivity, let's discuss high level, discuss the different generational attitudes towards politics. I don't know. Well, let's start with you because, everybody knows what my attitude about politics is at this point. So, you and I differ probably the most in our little group out of many things.
Oh, yeah. We agree on lots and disagree on quite a bit as well.
Yeah.
You know, politics right now for me is, I think everybody is trying to take the effect and make it the cause. Like, it doesn't matter if you lean left. Right now, there's a large group of people all across all spectrums that don't think they're getting a fair shake. They don't think they're playing on a level playing field. And it's showing, you know? And now, with the populist movements on both sides, it basically gives them permission, if not even instruction, to stop blaming policy. And start blaming groups of people. And it's becoming problematic.
Anyway, we have a caller. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's on your mind?
Everyone is in an uproar over the data centers and the amount of energy they're going to consume. But I don't understand why those data centers can't be built so they could actually go into the community grid and provide energy for whatever community they're close to.
I think that's happening in some places where companies like Microsoft, I mean, they're actually at some of the data centers, they're building their own power plants of some nature, and then whatever isn't used for the data center will go be fed into the grid.
That's the way it should be.
We've had this technology for a long time in our refineries, and they have units called cogen units.
Yes.
And they take the gas that would normally be flared out, and they take that energy and put it through a generator and supply the rest of our refinery and the surrounding community.
Well, that's really good.
I just don't get why that can't solve a lot of this problem.
Well, you know, there's a lot of problems that could be easily solved if the politics around them weren't so poisoned by different interest groups, I think, and we have that right now with Diablo Canyon. I mean, there are groups here. This is 10% of our California's grid power.
Well, that's why they kept that open.
Yeah, and
they knew they had to.
But there are still environmental groups that.
Oh, I'm sure. They'll never stop.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, well, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
All right, real quickly. Because we got a lot of stuff to talk about, so we talked about. What do you guys think on the whole aspect of? I guess really what Will is talking about is political discourse.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest change is that politics has become part of people's identity,
right?
Less about like you guys had mentioned, like it's not a discussion about policy anymore. And so when you make politics about, you know, who you are because it's your identity, disagreements start to feel personal rather than just like an intellectual conversation. So most Americans really want the same thing. I don't know anyone that disagree with wanting a safe community, good economic opportunities, affordable housing, quality education, and a government that's accountable. But nobody can have those conversations when everyone's arguing, well, I, you know, feel this is how it should be.
Yeah. Well, so that's an interesting question that I have that leads into my next topic. So we have this, they call themselves democratic socialists. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're really socialists or communists when it comes right down to it. I mean, there's nothing democratic about socialism or communism. I mean, when it comes right down, because again, it's top down, you know, versus bottom up kind of control. But, you know, talk about public safety. How does public safety square with letting criminals out of jails? I mean, one of these gals in New York City that just got nominated for that congressional seat, and now there's also one in Colorado that's running today. I mean, they just think we should just open up the jails and let all the criminals out and get them social workers. And I mean, so again, it's kind of hard. Don't you think it's kind of hard to have a conversation with somebody like that? That where you can get anything positive.
Depends on the conversation you're having, I guess.
Yeah. What do you think? Will has a thought.
I just don't think it's surprising.
You don't think it's a what?
I don't think it's surprising. I mean, it's been a long time that we've accepted this whole idea of a regular guy movement, this populism thing. And the scary part to me isn't, I mean, the right's had it. They have a nationalist populist movement. In fact, they say it openly. Now the left are going the other way, and they're just blaming somebody else. The problem is when the bridge gets made between the two. The two wings come together, and there's a lot of that starting to happen. I hope it doesn't get legs, but again, got to change the focus back to cause and effect, and how do we make things happen? And back to Jay's point, everybody wants the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and I mean, back to the polarizing part of it is like social media is another like huge big part of that. Is every generation has political disagreements, but this is the first generation where algorithms are rewarding outrage. You know, the loudest voice gets amplified, which can make the country seem more divided than people are in everyday life. Like, I don't walk outside my door worrying about what the left or the right are doing, but when you hop online, that's all it seems like, is everybody's disagreeing.
Is it going to make it different this time?
It's a good question.
I mean, we're talking about generational and generational changes. It's obviously not the first time it's occurred.
Right.
And the question is, these new things like social media and AI and all of these other, these algorithms that drive people into different groups, is that going to make it, is that going to change the outcome? Because typically, eventually it hits the fan and everybody settles out.
Right.
Yeah, I think that what's happening with the younger generations is that there's so much quick information and no one's actually taking the time to educate themselves on like what's actually going on. And so a lot of the time you'll see like somebody protesting or be very upset about something, and they'll be asked a, you know, intellectual detailed question and they can't answer it. And it's because they're fueled with not by information, like genuine information or educated information, they're filled by emotion.
We were having lunch today and I said, I've never been, as long as I've been alive, information has never been this readily available.
Yeah, and it's
perspective
quick.
Perspective has never been in shorter supply.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so this leads me to the next thing. You know, we've talked about, and I sent around the book by Jonathan Turley, Rage in the Republic, and then I sent out his kind of like synopsis of it. And you made, you know, basically, I think we're seeing, and Kaylin made I was looking for your email again. I deleted it by accident, but it was such a thoughtful email that you wrote, because really, I mean, it's like we're seeing in many regards what we saw in the French Revolution, where the Democrat Party basically created the socialist ferment, and now the ferment is starting to kill off the originators, the Robespierres of the world, right. You know, who were the bourgeois, the middle class. What were your thoughts on that, Kaylin? Because I thought that was really, I didn't mean to spring it. I was looking for your email again, but it was a great response.
Yeah, I was interesting. You know, in school we're taught that the French Revolution is just like a bunch of people that were hungry, and the bread was being used to make cakes, and that's largely what caused it. And that's all I remember learning in school. And so when you actually dig into it, you find out that there was real rage from the people that were at that level and didn't have food, and there was a lot of mismanagement there, so that's justified. But there was also, you know, very affluent individuals high up in government, you know, what you would consider to be respected individuals that were fueling this fire in France to get a change in policies and politics for their own benefit, and it definitely backfired on them. I thought that was interesting because I didn't know that until I actually wanted to like be educated enough to understand it. So it wasn't just about bread and cake, that's for sure.
No, it wasn't. Absolutely.
Well, I think it's scary.
Yeah.
Because I see it happening now. I mean, how many people do you see that take on some social issue that is not theirs?
All the time. All the time.
Day.
Yeah, everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, yeah, I think this is, I mean, we are definitely, you know, in the winter of the fourth turn, in the fourth turning, and we're watching again, all the institutions that we've been used to for the last 70 years are disintegrating before our eyes. And,
right.
And I think that's but in the French Revolution, I mean, it's so in the American Revolution, what was dissolving was the bonds between English Americans, American English, that had moved, you know, and the crown, and that system of government. You know, that there was some pretty, and if you read Jonathan Turley's book on this, I mean, there were still a lot of violence amongst the colonists upon each other, mm-hmm. especially, you know, the loyalists, you know, that were, you know, and there was a lot of property confiscation and all that, but it was nothing like the destruction of the French society. You know, it was the monarchy that went down, it was the church that went down, and again, it was what disturbs me the most, and about the DSA, the socialists, and in the comparison with the French Revolution, is so much of it is about envying other people's stuff, that we don't have it, so we're just going to go take it.
Yeah, but like, one of the reasons that this country exists in the way it exists is that people felt like if they came here, they could gain land and they could gain social status.
Right.
And that it was actually possible that mm-hmm. they could come here and do some things. In France, at that particular time, like there's a little bit of a difference in, we had a meritocracy mm-hmm. compared to a, Jay hates it when I say this, a learned helpless situation.
Yeah. Well, and again, I mean, in essence, I mean, the British had their glorious revolution 100 years before the American Revolution. So a lot of that stuff, a lot of those things got worked out between the Protestants and the Catholics and over like a 30 or 40 year period. And then a lot of those people came to the United States wanting a brand new life. Or came to the colonies wanting a brand new life.
Yes.
And
seeing opportunity.
Yeah. Let's shift gears before we go into the break.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to ask you this, Jay.
Yes.
Now that we just had a moon mission a few months ago, do you still believe the moon landing was a it was all filmed in a studio?
Well, that's such a loaded question. Put it all out there.
Oh, don't. That's what you count on me for, right?
Because we did a moon mission, right? We didn't do another moon landing.
Well, not yet. Not yet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's weird that, you know, in the 60s we could land on the moon and today we decided just to slingshot around the moon?
Yeah, well, there was the Apollo 8 mission was just slingshotting across around the moon before the moon landing.
Yeah.
There are several slingshots around the moon.
Okay.
So
I do agree with the argument that you and Will both made, that I think that it'd be harder to have faked the moon landing with the technology that was available than to have just actually gone. But the moon landing is just super weird in general.
All right. You're okay with the moon landing in 1969, right, Kalen?
Yeah, I mean, I can see the point argued that we would want to trick the Soviets into thinking we did it before them. That,
okay.
Like, it makes sense, like, why we would try to stage that. Mm-hmm. But I agree with Jay in the terms of, like, you know, why don't we have, like, buildings on the moon yet? You know what I mean? I feel like we should have already been there, like, 10 years ago.
Because Elon wasn't around.
Yeah. Well, now he just wants to go straight for Mars.
Which and I don't know that they had a purpose yet. Like, lack of gravity is the
purpose.
It was just
getting there, picking up some rocks, getting there, getting back.
We like to do things just because we can.
Yeah. So. All right. What you know? So, Will, what's your favorite conspiracy theory of the day?
Oh, I don't know. I actually watched that conspiracy theory podcast thing. Most of them are baloney. I think.
What do you think about the UFOs? Oh. So sticking into space they're called unidentified. They're called something
they've
else.
Changed it. Yeah.
Yeah. They changed it to something.
I don't know why. Why mm-hmm. they have to change it? I don't know. I definitely feel like there's something unidentified mm-hmm. that people have seen flying around.
And it's us.
I'm not saying there's little green men in there or whatever aliens would be, but there's undoubtedly something mechanical that we don't know about that's been caught.
UAPs.
UAPs.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't aliens come down here and make their presence known? I don't know. Like, they're not scared of us.
I don't even like talking to people. Why wouldn't aliens want to talk to us?
Yeah, but we're not threatening.
Yeah. No, but you're not intelligent enough to have the conversation.
All right. Well, when we return after the break, we're going to discuss what I think are the three most important aspects of the Declaration of Independence. So stand by. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report. Stocks ending the last trading day of the month, quarter, and first half of the year higher, with the Dow posting its 19th record close of the year, while the NASDAQ and S&P 500 notched their best quarter in 6 years. Tech and industrials were the best performing sectors, while healthcare lagged. Big Pharma was under pressure today after U.S. lawmakers opened national security investigations into whether five major pharmaceutical companies, including Merck and AbbVie, were involved in clinical trials conducted in China. Oil prices edged lower, with West Texas Intermediate crude at $70 a barrel. The Dow winners, Caterpillar, Apple, and NVIDIA. The Dow decliners, Goldman Sachs, Honeywell Technologies, and Johnson & Johnson. The Dow up 136 points, the NASDAQ higher by 394, S&P 500 up 59. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
You're probably listening to this in your car, so let me ask you. Would you drive without insurance? Of course not. So why is your retirement portfolio unprotected? Gold is portfolio insurance. It helps de-risk your savings when markets get unpredictable. Noble Gold Investments has helped thousands of Americans do exactly that, with no high-pressure sales and thousands of five-star reviews. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com. Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals involves risk. Consult with your tax or financial professional before making any investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Do you use propane? At Delta Liquid Energy, you can pre-buy your winter propane gallons to lock in your price. Fuel prices fluctuate, so with Delta Liquid Energy, you can take advantage of potential pre-buy savings. To learn more, contact Delta Liquid Energy before June 30th. Family-owned and operated, call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online to deltaliquidenergy.com.
I've got deals on latex beds. I've got deals on memory foam beds.
We're talking to Rich London, the mattress specialist.
I've got beds with springs, hybrids, where they got springs and memory foam, or springs and latex, or some with even springs, latex, and memory foam. I've got them all.
Big savings now on mattresses of all shapes and sizes at the Mattress Specialist at 13th and Riverside in Paso Robles.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with my buds from the Multi-Generational Grape and Grain Society, Will Barnaby, Kaylin Clark, and Jay Leach. You can still call or text with questions, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. As I mentioned, next week I have James Walker, CEO of Nano Nuclear Energy, and then Greg Haskin from CoLab. And we're going to do our pre-fair survey of what happened in the county the last 6 months. Okay. So in this final segment, I'd like to discuss three concepts of the Declaration of Independence with you guys. And I'm going to read them very quickly. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with one another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station in which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And then finally, I've got two questions on those two aspects of it, and then the last sentence of the Declaration, which is, and for the support of this Declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of the divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And this is what all 50 or 60 signers of the Declaration signed to. So this was life or death to them. It was clearly existential. So, with that thought in mind, do my questions are this. Do our rights come from God or not, or the government? Who wants to start? Let me preface this for a moment. We all have different conceptions of God in this room.
Yeah, sure.
So that's why I'm asking this question. Right. So what do you think, Will?
I think people are born with certain rights, and they do not come from the government. Government only has power that we choose to give it.
No, it's natural rights.
Natural rights. Natural
right.
Rights, yeah. Absolutely.
They're imprinted on your heart.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
And people are willing to fight for them.
Yeah. Jay?
Yeah.
Mr. Cynic?
I think that one of the most revolutionary ideas in the Declaration was Jefferson wasn't saying government gives us rights.
Okay.
He was saying our rights exist before government. So government's job is to protect those rights, not create them. If a government creates rights, then it can also take them away.
Mm-hmm.
The Declaration flips that idea on its head and says our rights are inherent.
Right. What about you, Caleb?
I would say that life is very important. I think we should all be more appreciative for our lives, and that human life in particular is interesting in our sense of being sentient and in the way that we are. And so with that, I think should come a respect for that life, for everyone to have.
You just can't say the G word, can you?
Again,
that's why I'm asking the question, because we all have this different perception, and part of it's generational, and a lot of it's experiential, you know.
And I gotta say, a lot of it sounds like them just saying, hey, we know you're never gonna see us as equals, so we've got to go.
Well, and again, I mean, one of the articles I sent out to you guys talked about how this all was derived from the Magna Carta from 1266,
right,
when, you know, the barons of England were tired of the king bossing them around, and they were paying for it.
Yeah.
And so they basically wanted some respect, and then there was an even prior glorious revolution in England where they fought it out over this whole Magna Carta thing. So again, this didn't come out of thin air. So here's the next question.
Okay.
How would you, and let's start with Kaylin.
Okay.
How would you define the pursuit of happiness?
I don't know if I've never been asked that question before. I think it's an evolution. It's an evolution as you go throughout life, as you go become younger and older, you sort of figure out what that means to you.
Mm-hmm.
For me, as I've gotten a little bit older, I've found that it's important to focus on the little things that make me happy throughout the day, mm-hmm. so that all of the bad stuff that's going on doesn't seem as heavy. And then trying to become more community oriented with my friends and family that are around me and my community that mm-hmm. I live in. So I think that that's been a way that I've tried to become more grounded and be more happy in life.
Whose responsibility is it to give you happiness?
It's yourself, for sure. Mm-hmm. You have to be at peace within your own mind before anything else can really even happen.
So all the DSA kids that are complaining that Apple iPhones are going to be $100 more, and that we need to take over Apple. The government needs to take over Apple. It's kind of, again, that's an envy thing that I feel a lot of in today's society.
Yeah,
it's the government's job.
Are becoming less and less like genuinely educated.
Well, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
The Declaration doesn't promise anyone happiness. It promises you the pursuit of happiness.
The opportunity.
That's
right.
The key.
Right. Well, right. How about you, Will?
I think it comes down to the only ceilings that are placed on you are placed there by you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. If you're willing to go for something and make it happen, you should be able to make it happen.
Quick question. The final pledge, would you be willing to take, as the bumper music comes up, who would take that pledge today in this room?
Oh, yeah.
You would take it, uh-huh. Will?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you were unanimous. We'd all take it. So, guys, thanks for coming in. It's always fun to have you. And
thanks for having us.
We'll have a great summer. I know. All right, folks, take care. I'll look forward to talking to you next week. Have a great semi-quintennial week. All right, take care.
That's a hard word to say.
It is.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.